your last name? It's Mitchell...
Szczepańczyk.
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 Third time's the charm. Szczepańczyk.
Mitchell.
Very good.
Okay, good. That's quite a name. Wow.
Thank you. I studied long and hard to try to get a name that creative and unique.
What's the good, the bad, and the ugly of digital technology and how it's affected our minds, our ability to learn and communicate? Joining me right now is Mitchell Szczepańczyk, host of a radio program, WHBK Radio.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence, but not here. This is radio that respects your intelligence and challenges you to think and rethink. Where knowledge is power, this is powerful radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth.
Hello, and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. The year 2015, being an odd-numbered year, is considered to be an off year for American electoral politics. But in Chicago, the year 2015 marks the quadrennial elections for Chicago city government positions, including the city council and the mayor's office. It is a rare opportunity for regime change, especially since Chicago has no term limits for any of its elected officers. Unless an elected official is convicted of a crime, the only current legal way to remove a Chicago elected official from office is through those elections. Since the previous Chicago elections in 2011, Chicagoans have felt the iron fist policies of Mayor Rahm Emanuel in everything from mental health clinic closings to public school closings to the establishment of new unnecessary boondoggles for the rich and well-connected. Despite widespread discontent with the incumbent mayor, history has shown that it is exceedingly difficult to defeat incumbent Chicago politicians at the ballot box. But a few hearty souls dare buck this trend. Among them, Dr. Amara Enya, a community activist whose family has faced far more harsh circumstances in Nigeria. In this episode, we'll speak with Dr. Enya in an interview recorded on Monday, April 7th, 2014. We are joined on the phone with Dr. Amara Enya. Amara Enya is a municipal consultant and community organizer who is running for mayor in the 2015 Chicago mayoral race. And she is joining us on the phone now. Dr. Enya, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let's briefly begin by giving us a brief introduction about yourself. Tell us about yourself and also tell us why you're running for mayor.
Well, I am... The background story that people might be interested in is I'm the daughter of Nigerians that came to this country after we had a civil war and after their my parents were involved heavily in some anti-corruption activity in the country. And so they came here. And so part of the reason why they came here was to give us an opportunity to have more opportunities than they had. And so for me, that meant getting my education. So I went to the University of Illinois at Urbana, proudly, and I went there for undergrad. I went there and got my master's in education. I also went to law school there, and then I finished my PhD in educational policy studies. Before I finished my PhD, I started working in City Hall in the mayor's office under Mayor Richard M. Daley. And in that capacity, I was engaged in several different policy areas, doing a lot of work in the community, but also just in circles where we were really making policy for the city. And so a lot of the questions that I saw were around issues of equity and justice and wondering why there were groups and communities that didn't seem to be part of the equation when decisions were being made that impacted them. And so I knew that I wanted to work. I needed to work at the grassroots level because that's where the work is. And so from there, I went straight to the west side of Chicago. I went to the Austin community, largely because statistically, if you look at the profile of that community, it's the largest community in Chicago, but has some very serious challenges as it relates to unemployment, foreclosure, violence. And so I went to that community because that's where the work is and that's where I needed to be. I've been working there and then expanded my work to other sides of the city, several different communities on the south side, west side, and even on the north side. And that's where I am today.
When you were serving in the Daley administration, tell us a little bit about some of the work that you had done there. Elaborate, if you would, please. What were some of the initiatives that you did, and what are some of the successes that you were able to count on?
Great experience, primarily because it afforded me an opportunity to really see firsthand how the city is run, how policies are made, and how decisions are made. And so I also had the privilege of being working in various different policy areas. So I didn't do just one thing. So, for example, I worked in food security, and that's addressing the food desert issue. So in that capacity, we were working with the latest iteration was called Fresh Moves, but the initial project was on retrofitting a CTA bus that would carry fresh produce to communities that are food deserts. And so that was a fantastic project that I worked deeply on. The other was around violence. When I was there, the incident with Darian Albert down in Roseland occurred. I remember that day when it happened. And so from there, the conversation around how do we really address the root of violence as opposed to just sort of addressing at the surface level. So for me, part of my dissatisfaction was the fact that I didn't think that we were really doing enough to get to the root of the issue. And so especially around the issues of violence, it was a great way for me to really start to get down at the ground level and address the multifaceted issues that cause violence. And it was precisely because of what happened with Darian Albert. And around education, we also were working on housing. This was sort of when the housing market was beginning to, the foreclosure crisis was sort of moving into full swing. And so developing policies to try to help people stay in their homes was a big part of what was going on at that time. So the richness of the experience was because I had an opportunity to really engage across a broad array of policy issues and apply them in real time in the community.
There was an article that was published in These Times magazine written by Kari Leiderson, where she quotes an incident that had occurred. Let me quote from the article. You had planned to announce your campaign on February 11, 2014, but the event was canceled because board members at the venue where you planned to make the announcement were concerned about the reaction from the mayor. You elaborated on this some in the article, but what I wanted to ask you about this was, were you able to get an announcement going, and what has happened since this event happened?
Well, we are actually planning the official launch. So, yes, from that incident, we had to take another approach. And so that meant we had to identify a new venue and a new date to move forward. So that what happened was it was very last minute. It was after everything had been confirmed. And then our campaign received that information very late. So we did end up having to cancel it. And I think it was because there is a lot of concern and a lot of fear around what it means to be challenging the mayor, what it means to challenge an incumbent. So a lot of individuals and organizations are concerned about what if there may be a negative impact on them for something like hosting the event, even though the venue hosts events all the time. And so for me, what it meant is we know that this is probably going to happen. I mean, given the climate, given what it is that we're doing, what I'm doing, that this is probably par for the course. And so it just meant that we changed that strategy. We pushed the date back to the end of this month, where we identified a few different venues we knew up front, and they knew up front that they would have no issue with having someone who's coming in that they're challenging the mayor, and we just kept moving forward.
Along the lines of challenging the mayor, there are a number of folks who have raised some difficulties, and I would like to hear what your thoughts are with regards to addressing some of them. One of them that's probably the most prominent is the fact that, at least what's been reported, that our current incumbent mayor has assembled more than $6 million in funds, which is actually more than was raised in the 2011 mayoral campaign, wound up out raising and outspending its opposition combined by orders of magnitude. What do you say when people raise this as a concern of the fact that it's probably going to be very hard to try to raise enough money to be competitive in Chicago in the mayoral race?
Well, this race, this campaign, my campaign is about people. Through organized people, I think and I believe that we can actually be successful against organized money. The fear that because the incumbent has raised a certain amount of money, that it's people campaign. So what kind of message are we sending? The message for me seems to be, I think that we have to focus on the value of our leadership, and we will demonstrate that the power of organized people is far superior than the power of organized money. But what is more troubling is this notion that those who have money, who are either A, independently wealthy, or B, campaigns financed primarily by large corporate interests, are somehow more fit to lead. And I think we're learning that that is not the case, because when we look around at the city of Chicago and those who live in the city are experiencing the negative impacts of this current mayor's leadership. So we need to begin to ask critical questions about the values of leadership, not just how much money that they have. For me, the amount of money is no, it doesn't deter me at all, because the issues that are at stake and the lives and livelihoods of people in this city are too great for us to be afraid, or for me to be afraid, because $6 million. We will raise the money. And this campaign is in Chicago, but it's also national and international because of the message that we're sending. We're sending a message that we will not be invaded by numbers. That if that's the case, that we might as well concede every race only to those who are independently wealthy.
One question that's actually kind of connected to the money, and one that's very rarely raised as far as discussions regarding money in politics, is where does the money go? And the answer for the most part is when people will hear about huge sums of money that are raised for political campaigns, is overwhelmingly they're used to buy usually very bad television and radio advertisements. That kind of leads me to the question with regards to media coverage of your campaign. And the fact that it's been found, and the Chicago Reporter actually did research about this in 2011, that the success of votes gathered in the 2011 mayoral race was directly proportional, it so happened, to coverage in both the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times of the amount of coverage that was received. How is your campaign going to address the fact that you might not be getting a whole lot of either sympathetic coverage or even a lot of media coverage in your campaign to become mayor?
Well, our campaign, this is not relying on media coverage, number one. Number two, this is a people's campaign. So we will be on the ground in every neighborhood in the city, doors, and talking to people about what's happening in this city and why we need a change in direction. And that is the power that we have. So while you know, the incumbent may rely on having a sympathetic media to push that agenda, we're actually going to be talking to the people of this single neighborhood in the city of Chicago to spread our message. The other advantage that we have is that we are connecting with young people. We are connecting with millennials. We are connecting with people who are engaged through other outlets, social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on every social media outlet that allows us to spread our message without having to necessarily rely on traditional media. Some of the research does show that people are getting their news from abroad. They're not just reading the Chicago Tribune. They're not reading Sun-Times, and they're not just tuning in to network television. So we have a broad array of tools as it relates to media to spread our message. But most importantly, we'll be on the ground and in the community. And this is a campaign that will not take place from someone's newsroom or from someone's newspaper editorial room. This is a campaign that will take place in the streets of Chicago.
One issue that kind of like faded a little bit from memory, but has been certainly prominent within the incumbent administration, is with regards to the mental health crisis, fomented to no small extent over the fact that half the mental health clinics in the city of Chicago have been closed to no small part by the incumbent mayor. What are your thoughts about this? And if you become elected mayor of Chicago, what would you do to address this?
Well, I think the test of a city and the test of its leadership is how we treat our most vulnerable populations. And so on the one hand, we talk about being this great world-class city, the city on the hill. But on the other, you have our most vulnerable populations being essentially kicked out of the services that happened in the city when in 2012 the mayor closed 6 mental health clinics. Those individuals that could not receive services from those clinics were now forced to travel long distances, service, and in some cases, they weren't even able to get service after that. And so again, what kinds of values do we want reflected in our leadership? Do we want to live in a city where our most vulnerable populations are deprived of the services that they need to live? Because the people do not want that. And I think that now we're beginning to ask those sorts of questions of our leadership. In the city's multi-billion-dollar budget, we saved all of $1.7 million. So the question is, what's it worth saving $7 million? For the negative impact on the lives of those individuals who have to access a mental health care. The other thing is that mental health resources are not a luxury. This is a policy issue. It's a quality of life issue. And so when we close those clinics, it's not just closing clinics of people that perhaps have services. This impacts the level of crime and violence in our communities, and it seriously impacts quality of life for those who rely on that care. Not just for the individuals that directly receive the care, but for their families, for their caretakers, for their children. A lot of times when we talk about policy, the closing of the mental health clinics is one example of how this mayor is not tuned to what happens and how average Chicagoans are living and what we need to have a high quality of life in this city.
One other issue that's kind of in the foreground and hasn't really gotten the kind of coverage, although it actually is getting increased attention, is with regards to the full name is the Tax Increment Finance System, or TIFS, where Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader and others have noted that it basically amounts to refunneling of funds into unaccountable accounts for the mayor's office to be able to spend at whim vast sums of money for various usually pet projects and very little actually having to do with their intended purpose of developing the city. As mayor, what would you do with regards to the issue of TIFs, both with regards to their lack of transparency and the fact that tremendous amounts of sums of money there are not being used for their intended purpose?
Well, the TIFs are an excellent opportunity for reform, and you just named two of the biggest issues. Number one, the lack of transparency. We need to make sure that there is transparency in how TIF funds are used and who is involved and in what deals are made. And so for me, that means that particularly in the communities that are impacted by the TIF dollars or should be impacted by the TIF dollars, we need to have open councils where these discussions are taking place in the light of day. One of the major problems with this administration is that the mayor talks about transparency, but it's in a very shallow definition of transparency, which is post PDFs, copious amounts of PDFs online, and good luck. No, we need to make sure that when decisions are made about how TIF dollars are being spent, that the community is engaged, that the councils, that there are no conflicts of interest in the individuals that are making decisions about how TIFs are used. So those are just a couple of things. The other is that we need to get back to if we're going to leverage TIFs, what is the original purpose of the TIFs? The original purpose of the TIFs was to spur economic development in blighted areas. That is not happening. So you have communities who are not benefiting from the use of TIF dollars, even though those taxes are being collected and they're being siphoned through the porting process to other areas of the city that, by all intents and purposes, are not blighted. And so who's really benefiting from TIFs? In the communities that I work in, primarily on the south side and the west side, there are opportunities for development, but without the political will at the top of the city government to actually, as a matter of policy, target investment through leveraging TIF dollars, which are public dollars, not see the change that we're looking for and the change that the people of the city are looking for.
One more question. What do you think is the most important thing about your campaign and about your efforts that you feel is not getting mentioned or hasn't gotten the mention that you feel it deserves?
I think the most important thing about this campaign is that it's bigger than me. And it's actually not about me per se. It's about the city of Chicago, and it's about an opportunity for people to have a sense of self-efficacy about guiding the direction of the city. It's about people power. It's about people being empowered to say that I can actually change what my day-to-day experience is like. I can actually change what my community looks like. I can actually change the leadership structure because, after all, they work for me. That's what public servants are. That's what elected officials are. We work for the people. It's a position of servitude, a position of servanthood, I should say. And so when the people understand that, then there's no fear in pushing against status quo. There's no fear in saying that this leader does not reflect my values, therefore we need to choose other options. Right now, there's too much fear and there's too much hesitance because we've been led to believe by the powers that be that there's a certain profile for leadership. So that person has to have a certain level of wealth. They've got to be a certain race. They have a certain gender. And if you don't fit within that box, then you are not qualified to lead. We have to reject that. We have to say that as a city, the most important thing is what values do our leaders have, and are we working in our interests? Not in the interests of corporations, not in the interests of the few politically connected. Are they working for the people of this city? And so if you live here, we have a responsibility as a people to change that leadership structure. This is to say that we can transform this city if we only move beyond the lies that we've been told and the falsehoods that we've been led to believe. Look at an alternative vision that includes us, an alternative vision that works for us. We can get there. We just have to have the will to move forward. And I don't want people to feel afraid. I don't want them to feel beaten down by the system. I want them to feel excited and optimistic because there is a better future waiting for us.
We've been speaking with Dr. Amara Enya. She is a municipal consultant and community organizer who is running, or soon will be running, in the Chicago 2015 mayoral race. Dr. Enya, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Dr. Amara Enya, recorded on April 7, 2014. Amara Enya's website is amaraforchicago.com, spelled AmaraForChicago.com.
Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.